This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Durham is celebrating its 150th anniversary this year. Throughout the year, we plan to look back at the Bull City's history. Today, we're focusing on Hayti. The area was once the commercial and social hub of Durham's African-American community. Today, Hayti looks very different. Many residents and businesses moved out of the area after desegregation and Highway 147 cut Hayti off from the rest of downtown Durham. We're talking to three guests today about the important part of Durham's history this neighborhood plays. Aya Shabu is a Durham-based dance artist, and she also gives walking tours of Hayti. Aya, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Also with us is Justin Robinson, Durham-based artist and cultural historian. Justin, welcome back. Good to have you here as well.
Thank you, Frank.
Aya, you give these walking tours, and I know you know a lot about Hayti. Describe the Hayti neighborhood in its heyday.
In its heyday, so we're talking about the early 1900s. We're talking about a place that Skeepy Scarborough describes as self-sufficient. People talk all the time about how we had everything. We had our own dentist offices. We had our own libraries. We had our own lawyers. We had our own universities. We had our own shops. You know, churches certainly were the foundation in the spiritual life of that community. So we're talking about a people who had a lot of pride. And this is in the context of Jim Crow.
And there was a black middle class in this city, which was unusual for southern cities at the time, but not for Durham, right?
No, I mean, so we're looking at, you know, institutions and institution buildings. So 1898, 1899, the beginning of North Carolina Mutual Insurance Company, and they really became the black elite. You know, most folks have come through that institution, and they really were the economic engine for Hayti.
It's an artery of capital, and then you can have ownership, and that, of course, is the foundation, and it brings banking to the city. And Justin, I understand that your family was drawn to Durham from far away for that very reason.
Yeah. So my great-great-grandparents would come from Chester, South Carolina, which is where my mother's family is from, in the around the same time period that I was talking about, to do their banking. They did that for years and years and years, to sell cotton, to do all their shopping, to do a great many things that they could not do in South Carolina. One of the ways that I think about this is based on Michelle Lanier's work, is thinking about this idea of Afro-Carolina. So Afro-Carolina would be about the sort of the people of African descent who are living in the Carolinas. And in my sort of riffing off of Michelle's work, thinking about Durham as the capital of Afro-Carolina. And then the Hayti then is the crown jewel of what it means to be an Afro-Carolinian. So as me, you know, I moved here from further southwest of here near Gastonia, North Carolina. I just moved to the capital of Afro Carolina. Like, it makes my story make a lot of sense.
Well, and this idea of the connection to the African diaspora, the idea that there is a pride and a heritage that can be nurtured and then developed. Talk about the name Hayti, Aya.
Yeah, so Hayti, H-A-Y-T-I. When I first came, I thought folks had it wrong. I thought that was Haiti. Yeah. And when I did the research, I recognized that, you know, this was a self-named people celebrating the victory of independence of Haitian folks from French colonialism. And so it makes a lot of sense that this black enclave, this black settlement, would name themselves as such a prideful nation.
Yeah, the first independent black republic in the Western Hemisphere. And, of course, it was an important touchstone. So that becomes a capital and, again, a light on the hill. What all is going on? We talked about the Afro-Carolina. We've talked about this being a cultural, an economic and commercial hub, but also a social hub for folks, right? And so what's going on socially in these neighborhoods that
yes.
we now call Hayti?
Yeah, so one area of Hayti that we don't actually visit a whole lot because there's not much there anymore is Pettigrew Street, which was, you know, alive with music. It's where the Piedmont Blues was born. You know, we had our theaters there and our restaurants, and the only hotel where you could stay as an African-American was located on Pettigrew Street, and that was the Biltmore Hotel. So it really was kind of the social and cultural hub, whereas Hayti more was a commercial residential sector.
And how did it connect with the rest of the city? It was certainly a segregated city at that time, although the rules were slightly different, but still very much a segregated city. How did Hayti connect with the rest of Durham?
Well, so I think that's answered by the North Carolina Mutual and the executives there. I mean, they worked there on Paris Street, but they lived in Hayti. They lived on Fayetteville Street. And that makes a big difference in terms of being a force that is able to work in a white world, but also protect the black world. You know, Hayti could have been easily another Oklahoma. What's the name?
Tulsa,
yeah.
Could have been
yeah.
another Tulsa, but I think...
Or Rosewood.
And but I think the African-Americans of that black elite class, they made sure that Hayti neighborhood was protected just by their very fact of having homes on that street.
So when you give tours now, we're going to talk about what caused the change. Things are not that way anymore in the neighborhood. When you give tours to people, what do you point out and how do you embody what was happening then?
Yeah, I point out the connections to Haiti, and that's my personal connection. Not that there were Haitian people living here, but, you know, I think it's important for us to make connections to the diaspora because we are a segregated people and that we've been displaced. So that's important to me. But also the institutions that are still standing, like the Hayti Heritage Center, which used to be St. Joseph's AME Church, which was foundational to the community. The Carolina Times is still there. And that's really important in terms of the fight for civil rights for folks in Hayti. I also point out Stanford L. Warren Library as an educational center. Yeah.
This city in Hayti was one of the few places Martin Luther King could come and raise capital and find himself a comfortable place. This in Atlanta was another place, Justin. So it also played an important role in the city of Durham, but Hayti neighborhood and the communities that developed as a result played an important part in that part of the civil rights movement as well, did it not?
Yeah, that's true. So as Durham was a hub for just a lot of black life and a lot of black commerce, education, all of those things, it makes sense that a lot of civil rights leaders would have come through here. And we know about Royal Ice Cream sort of before the Greensboro. So along with Ann.
In case you don't know,
right.
The sit-in
Sorry.
That actually, in case you don't know, and sadly, that was a sit-in that took place maybe 2 years before the AT&T students and Bennett students as well participated and supported the sit-in at the Woolworths. So, yeah, it was going on here a long time.
So,
well, and so let's talk about how things have changed and also how things are moving forward. Our next guest is an expert on Hayti and the community's history. Angela Lee is the executive director of the Hayti Heritage Center. That organization is a key member of the Durham art scene and has been vital for the preservation of Hayti's history. Angela, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, and it's really good to be here.
Talk about what is now the Hayti Heritage Center, St. Joseph's Church, with the role that church played in the community as a centerpiece.
Well, you've heard from Aya and from Justin, and St. Joseph's AME Church was extremely pivotal to the community. The church still operates. They just relocated further, is it west? I'm not sure. But anyway, they're still on Fayetteville Street, and they still worship. But when they relocated, the space at Hayti was eventually renovated and opened as a performance hall. In 92. It is listed on the National Historic Registry, and it is still a very beautiful, sacred space, remnants of the church with the stained glass windows and lower level pews. But, because of the extremely rich heritage and history and the present, you know, those stories continue, and that's very important. So the Hayti Heritage Center for Cultural Arts and Arts Education opened in 75. So we've been a cultural hub for the community for all of these years. And as Durham has grown, as the community has gentrified, it's even more important that Hayti's impact in the community remain and continues to grow. The footprint is established. People still understand and recognize Hayti's importance. And nationally, organizations like Hayti have disappeared, and they're disappearing all the time.
It has. Mm-hmm. It, certainly, things are still thriving there in
yes.
part because of the cultural center that
yes.
keeps things together and keeps mm-hmm. reminding us. But things have changed. How have things changed for Hayti?
Well, I've been there for 6 years, And I think that, like a lot of organizations during the economic downturn, Haiti suffered, the center suffered, the community continued to suffer, but thankfully, things have changed. There's been a renewed interest. There's been a renewed energy. People like Aya and Justin and all of the stakeholders in the organization, you know, we have seen our numbers of visitors and participants in programming increase from, oh my goodness, 22,000 visitors annually. When I got there in 2013, we had over 46,000 wow. this past year.
So the Haiti Heritage Center is still doing well. The community yes. is not the hub that it used to be. That has changed a little bit. What caused the change, Aya, in terms of that neighborhood as a central location?
Yeah, I mean, I think in short, I would say capitalism. you know, I mean, integration is one of the biggest factors when so when black folks could spend their dollars elsewhere, when they fought for that right to spend their dollars elsewhere, the dollar stopped circulating within the black community. But there were many factors prior to integration that also contributed to the downfall of Haiti. The fact of the matter is that Haiti was protected by a lot of white philanthropists simply because it maintained segregation. When that was no longer needed, then the community that was never really supported, I mean, didn't have the infrastructure, the municipal infrastructure, roads, plumbing. So it was always in a state of disrepair. After World War II, we had a baby boom. So when that ban on housing happened during the war, many of those soldiers who came back contributed to overcrowding. They themselves and then all the babies they produced upon their return. So we had just a lot of pressure on this very fragile system to begin with. So those are just some of the factors that contributed.
And Justin, the construction of 147 didn't help at all. In fact, that hurt a great deal.
Did not help at all. And just piggybacking off what Aya said, given all those factors that had led up to that point, 147, and the language around 147, in the building and the conceptualization of 147, the language around in the newspapers, which you can go look it up, is very much about, oh, these are slums, this needs to be bulldozed, like this whole set of languages around that this just basically being a cesspool and needed to go, and like this was urban renewal and going to make these places better, these people's lives more enjoyable, you know, for everybody, and that was the rhetoric that was
right.
used.
It wasn't even the case in that case, and of course, the idea that it was going to be replaced in any way was not in anybody's mind, at least the planners. But the fact is, there was this cultural hub, right, with all of this cultural development. So, how do we see that today? If it's not located, and I'll stick with you for a minute, Justin, if it's not centered on a particular neighborhood, it certainly is alive and well in Durham. How would you say it has thrived?
Well, I think it is thriving all over the place. I think that there are, I mean, just among the folks that I know in my community, a certain set of artists and other movers and shakers are thinking, are sort of rethinking about what it means to be in Durham, what we can contribute to Durham in terms of its art scene, in terms of economics, in terms of all the other ways you think about contributing to a city. And the Haiti is starting to play more and more and more of a role in that. A lot of the folks who I'm working with are centering Haiti, make sure that stuff happens at Haiti. I'm doing a film project now about the Land of Fish and Grits. It's called The Land of Fish and Grits, which is a TV show about the history of Southern food. And we had our very first showing at Haiti for the Haiti Film Festival put on by Lana Garland. And so it's things like that that are sort of making... helping to make Haiti and the Haiti Heritage Center more specifically a physical, a geographical yeah. hub for us to be able to gather, to meet, to be able to exchange ideas. It feels like a second home for me. I'm there a lot.
Talk about the importance of that, Angela, not only having a center where all of these artists can come and perform and remember that this was the place where we, you know, once part of this, as we say, a hub of a community. But also the idea that I wonder how many people now are coming to the center. You talked about the increase in numbers. Mm-hmm. Who didn't know mm-hmm. about this and who get to learn about it because they're coming to the Haiti Heritage Center.
More and more all the time. We have visitors who come in and will say either they have not been there in many, many years or they've never been there. They've always been curious about what this building was. Some people thought it was still a church. You know, we get all kinds of responses. But I will tell you that, you know, Haytie is, it serves many purposes. And while we can't be everything for everybody, we are a place for artists. We support community. We support the arts and artists. And we know how very important that is, because as Durham continues to grow, expand, become increasingly expensive, you know, artists are looking for places, and local artists in particular, artists who made Durham a vibrant space years and years ago. They helped create the scene that we enjoy now, and they're being pushed out because of just life and commercialism. So we provide a space for that, but we also welcome visitors. We are very inclusive, and we have people who come as far away. We've had recent visitors from Germany, from Spain, from Italy. You know, people want to. We've had folks who've come to Haytie because they have read about Blind Boy Fuller and the blues scene, the Piedmont blues. They respect it. We have folks who want to have convenings there. We not only provide our own core programs in visual and performing arts, but we have a lot of folks who want to utilize the space. There's a reverence to it, and it's such a beautiful space, and there are very few places like it in Durham or anywhere else where we can accommodate the types of programs that people are about when it comes to being inclusive, when it comes to being creative, when it comes to being culturally vibrant. You know, so all of the things that Haytie used to be, Haytie is again.
Well, and it's I think, a monument to the place and to the community, that anybody who's ever been in that space, I can only marvel at how you feel. Mm-hmm. The fact that it is a spiritual place, it's a church, and lends itself so readily and easily to performance, and yet mm-hmm. you still feel the reverence. That's always hard to do. You know, I've been at performances in churches, and there's a little awkwardness mm-hmm. about whether or not I should be mm-hmm. in the sanctuary singing the song. Mm-hmm. And there's some way in which that center has adapted to both mm-hmm. and brought the best of both worlds together. It's kind of incredible. Justin, you are part of a project called Reconnecting Haytie to the Heart of Durham. Tell us more about that project.
That's the Safe Routes to Parks initiative. Excuse me. That extraterrestrial projects and organization that I'm involved with and the Haytie Heritage Center are doing. This is a grant that we received earlier this year, which provides technical assistance, of course, money as well, that is helping to think about how the Haytie community and the Haytie Heritage Center both can be reconnected to the center of downtown. One of the things that 147 did was put up sort of an invisible wall between Haytie and the rest of Durham. Like, while it's not an actual wall, it seems like it, right? So much so that Haytie is no longer included in downtown, right? Lots of measures, like Haytie, the downtown area stops at 147. Like, there's an invisible wall. So with this project, this initiative, we are hoping to be able to have both Haytie community and sort of the city be able to, gives us time to be able to think and ideate about how we want to do that, specifically centered on the Black Wall Street Park on Parrish Street, and to be able to think about how we work with the city in thinking about transportation-oriented development with the Durham Beltline, with the R. Kelly Bryant Trail, with the light rail, all of those things, how we are able to think about this as a municipal idea, how we are connecting those things together. And specifically, when I want to speak about, when we talk about safe. So Safe Routes to Parks, people may think, well, does that mean just pedestrian stuff? Right. Does it mean just pedestrian stuff? We really mean do people feel safe walking because of age or disability or gender or race? All of those things, a very wide idea of what safety is.
I want to thank all of you for being on our program. Justin Robinson, a Durham-based artist and cultural historian. Angela Lee is executive director of the Haytie Heritage Center. And Aya Shabu is a Durham-based dance artist and a walking tour operator. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
You can find out more about Haytie at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, is it more important to beat Duke or win the championship? We will talk about what many say is the biggest rivalry in college sports. Art Chansky joins us in a moment. Please stay tuned.